The call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Fikhu SPDP Working Group call on Tuesday, 18 December. On the call, we have Mark Anderson, Roar Balesti, Ilya Bazyankov, Amar Elsad, Alan Greenberg, Volker Grayman, Frederic Guillemot, Mikey O'Connor, Susan Proser. We have apologies from Avery Doya, Tim Ruiz, Wilson Abigaba, and Steve Metalitz. And from staff, we have Marika Connings, Barry Cobb, and myself, Julia Chavalin. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thanks, Julia, and welcome all to our pre-holiday call of the Fikhu's Working Group. We'll run through the agenda and the statement of interest stuff and then get underway. The big event from last week was sort of getting the subgroups formed, so we'll just sort of check in with those and see how that's going. We might take a look at a template for the questions that the subgroups are developing for the expert group. We'll get an update, I think, primarily from Marika on how we're doing on assembling the expert group. It's going pretty well from what I've seen. And maybe dive into developing some questions on our own. We'll see about that. Is there anything that people would like to add or change about that agenda? I'm not hearing anybody. Also, if anybody has a change to their statement of interest, this would be a good time to tell us about that. All right. Getting a thumbs up from Volker in the chat, so I think with that we'll carry on. Let's see. Of our sub-team leaders, I'm not sure we have... Oh, Alan's on the call. I think Steve and Susan Kawaguchi are not. So, Alan, are you on the bridge yet?
This is Rick. I don't see him yet on the line.
He's yeah, okay. Sounds like the bridge is a little congested there. It's funny how some days it is and some days it's not. Hey, there he is. Cool. Alan, we just got to the very first agenda item, and you are the lucky guy that is the only subgroup leader on the call. So when we do the update on the status of subteams, you get to go first. You want to just fill us in on what, if anything, has happened? I know that we've got some stuff set up for you, and maybe before I get to Alan, I'll swing over to Marika because she's set up email lists and pages for the groups and
sorry,
all that.
Mikey, if you were talking to me, I missed the first part of that, what you said, so I didn't know
yeah.
you were talking. I didn't know you were talking to me.
Yeah, that's all right. Hang in there, and by the end of Marika's spiel, it'll all become clear, I think. Marika?
Yeah, so this is Marika. So we have already set up mailing lists for the different sub-teams, and people on those groups should have received a confirmation email. If you haven't done so, please let me know, and we'll make sure to fix that. In addition, the links to the public archives have also been added to the section on the GNSO website where you have all the mailing list archives. And what I've also done, and Mike is just pulling that up on the screen, I've created a page on our wiki for each of the sub-teams. So what is there now for each of those? You basically see the mailing link to the mailing list archive and the members that are part of that group. And of course, it's the wiki is there for each sub-team to use as they would like, as they see best fit. So if you want to add pages or create information here for the different meetings, and also if you need any help in doing so, just let us know.
Cool.
Marika,
Mikey, it's Jonathan Zook.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, as somebody who's participating on a later sub-team, is there what's the best way to be helpful in this early stage? if not to start the research component of that other work? Or, I mean, what should the rest of us be doing that aren't on these first three subteams? Is that a naive question?
No, that's a really good question. My focus at the beginning of this was to get these three going, just to sort of get a small snowball rolling down the hill so that we could, you know, begin to get some things underway. And quite frankly, I hadn't thought about that. Do you have any ideas? I mean, you threw out one that doesn't sound too bad to me. One of the things we could do as the first three teams are sort of getting going is we could go through the exercise of forming some of the later ones so that people could at least self-identify and begin doing some research on their own. I'm all for parallel. The thing I was concerned about was that we would get so much going on that we wouldn't be able to keep track of it all. And also, right. I was thinking that there was perhaps some sequence to this where we would learn things in these three sort of more technical ones that would feed into the later ones, but I'm making all up on the fly, so I'm all ears.
I don't want to derail your process at all. I mean, if the answer is the subgroups will go work and that we'll use these open calls as just a reporting mechanism from the subteams and we should just keep our powder dry, that's fine too. I just wanted to figure out what you had in mind.
I hate to disperse energy by leaving people idle, you know, at the same time. I mean, one way to view it is the way you said, Jonathan, which is the rest of us sort of coast along. We kind of watch how things go for the subgroups. We contribute as things emerge that we get interested in. Another is to sort of launch some parallel stuff. So, Jonathan, I think at this point I kind of have to take that and chew on it for a bit rather than blurt out an answer. Marika, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. One suggestion I do have, because we do have set up on the wiki these pages for each of the topics with the idea of indeed collecting reference materials and information. So I don't think anything should prevent those members that already want to start digging and finding information to maybe already start including that there, so that, you know, when those sub-teams kick off, at least information is there. And as some of you may have seen, I've already started adding some other things that I, for example, received from colleagues on some of these topics, and I'm hoping to get more information to add here. So maybe that's, if people do want something to do, maybe that's one of the things they can start looking at.
Okay.
Let me just dig in to this and see. I have to remember where they are. Oh, there they are. So over here in the wiki, you can see, maybe if I make it a little bigger, it'll be easier to see. See pages for each of the topics. So, Jonathan, which is one of the ones that you're interested in?
Competition.
Competition.
Right below. There you go.
There it is. Okay, so there's a sort of starter page, and there are some places that you can fill in sources and the relevant section of the source. And there's sort of two ways that you could do this. One is you could actually dive into the wiki and edit this page directly. Another would be to send that to Marika and me, and we could drop it in for you. It sort of depends on how you feel about all that.
Okay.
But that seems like a pretty productive idea. I like that idea a lot. So that maybe what we do is just capture that so that I don't forget to on What do I want to say?
Future teams.
Yeah, future teams. That's a good one. That's a great first idea. Thanks, Marika, for that. And Jonathan, that's a terrific question. Thanks a lot on that one. And Roy is in there saying the wiki is helpful, and I'm on a future team too. I would ask everybody in the group to sort of think about that, because my goal was not to shut those off. My focus was really on getting something stuck. And so if there's some way that we can get some other work done in parallel without distracting ourselves from getting these first three groups really underway, I like that a lot. And so let's keep thinking about that. Great one, Jonathan. So, Alan, what we're talking about when you fell into the call was... The first agenda item is to sort of give us an update on the status of those subteams, and I think you are still the only subteam leader that's on the call to actually give us an update on your team, so that's what I was sort of leading into for you, was if you could just give us a quick update on what's happened and what your thoughts are and any issues that you've got that the rest of us could help with, and so on and so forth. So,
well,
you want
to report? The report is relatively easy. To be quite candid, I forgot I was a sub-team leader, and I have done nothing. I've been up to my ears on a number of other issues, some ICANN-related, some not, and I haven't done anything, and no one else has stepped forward and done anything either in the group. So we are where we stood, with a couple of vague suggestions in the mind map and not a lot more.
Well, it's okay. It's the holiday season, and you know, Marika's done a bunch of stuff too. So, I don't want people to feel put on the spot or in any way uncomfortable in this.
Well, I feel put on the spot because I didn't remember I volunteered. If indeed I volunteered, but I'm willing
you did
to take
volunteer.
It on. I'm willing
you
to take it on.
You did, and I was really glad you did.
I think I volunteered for one of them, and you merged the two together. But in any case,
yeah. Well, that's what happened. See, you were on both, and then I said, "Oh, well, there's Alan on both," and so there you are, the leader.
It has not happened yet, and it probably won't before the new year. At this point,
that's all right. We'll figure it out. That's what this is all about. So, and Marika is telling me that Susan Kawaguchi's on the call.
I am.
Cool. Yeah, how much of all that did you hear? Do you want to give us a little snapshot of what's going on in your gang?
So, not much, but I did send an email yesterday to there's just five of us on the team. And so I sent an email yesterday with my questions, because although I volunteered to be leader, I don't know much about the migration and the synchronization, so I'm hoping the other members will. So I don't know. I sent it yesterday afternoon, so I haven't checked my email yet this morning. So hopefully we'll get something going on the email thread. But with the holidays approaching, one member has already said that they can't do anything until January, which is understandable. So we'll try to push forward.
Well, I'm liking how far we've gotten. You know, I think it's fine to sort of relax a bit. You know, my style on these things is that I go absolutely frantically crazy at the beginning of projects to sort of get the ball rolling. And then there's some point at which I go, oh, the ball is rolling. And I sort of relax. And I'm feeling pretty comfortable about how far we've gotten with all this. So I'm delighted to hear. We may circle around to those questions because we've got an item on the agenda towards the end where we might start brainstorming some questions in this group, and so we might start with those that you've already done, Susan.
Take note that I am driving, that we're getting in the car now, because this is my commute time.
Well, that's okay. I think we can probably run out to the archive of your list and dig out your questions, so you don't have to worry about that.
We got
your back. We got you covered.
All right.
Okay, well, Steve isn't on the call. Is anybody else in the authoritativeness group on the call and want to just, you know, has there been any email or has it been pretty quiet? Amr and then Mark. Amr, go ahead.
Hi, Mikey. This is Amr. We did get our mailing list set up last Thursday, I believe. And there have been a few emails going back and forth. Steve set up a doodle poll to try to work out a time for a first call. I think he wanted to get it going quite early, either last Friday or possibly yesterday, but that didn't work out. So we did schedule a call for the 21st of December. So hopefully we will have more to report following that.
Spectacular. That's great. I guess you're alone. I thought Mark was in there. Mark must have referred to you.
This is Mark. I lowered my hand. Amir gave the same update I would have. So thank you, Amir.
Cool. Well, this is neat. I'm liking this a lot. Okay. Thanks all for those updates and Marika for doing all of the getting ready. I think this is spectacular. Let's move on to the questions template topic. Marika, do you want to rest the screen away from me and throw something up or just talk us through it? Because I'll take some notes, but I don't necessarily have to.
This is Marika. I actually have nothing to put up, but I was just wondering maybe to help kickstart some of these sub-teams, maybe would help if the working group would identify some questions which they hope or expect the sub-teams to come back with answers, because I'm assuming that some of the questions might be similar for all of them. And I know that some of the other working groups that are ongoing have been quite successful. I mean, they have really elaborate Excel sheets that I've seen where people are asked to fill in and put responses. I'm not really suggesting that we maybe go down that route, but maybe that is something that will help the sub-teams in focusing their work, and that might maybe help as well doing more work on the mailing list instead of maybe a need to set up a lot of calls or a lot of time like that.
So in the successful templates that you've seen before, Marika, what kinds of information generally in there? And what was it that made that useful and helpful for the people that use?
Well, this is Marika. The only one I've seen, and Barry's probably better fit to talk about that one, is the one that they're using for the IGO PDP, where I think they've created Excel sheets and basically asked people to identify for different questions, like criteria that would need to apply. I think for here it might work a different way, but it would be asking the question, I guess it would be on what information are you basing your findings? Please detail what is your finding. It would be very straightforward questions. What have you considered? Were there dissenting views within your sub team on your recommendation? So to basically try to detail a bit, and I guess what we're eventually looking for is for each sub team to make a kind of recommendation on where the working group might go in its view on whether it would be a good idea or a bad idea to have takeaways from the perspective of that specific topic. And again, to substantiate that with the information they gathered and discussed, which then can be considered by the working group.
Let me figure out how to do this so that I get them in the order that you actually said them. Barry, could you Is Barry on the call? Yeah, he's on the call. Are those the four big chunks? Are there any other sort of big chunks in the template that you built for the IGO gang that you'd add to this list I did?
Hi, Mikey, this is Barry. The template that we're, I wouldn't even really call it a template, but it, within respect to the IGO working group, we divided into five sub-teams, and each one of those sub-teams is responsible for analyzing kind of a set of criteria that we have defined. And so each sub-team is offered with an overarching question of what they're trying to resolve, and then it's broken out based on the types of stakeholders that are involved with the issues of that working group. And then there are a series of questions that relate specifically to that topic or issue being addressed by that sub-team. So in a sense, we've created a column by row matrix for each sub-team to fill out. And we just started off with a draft template of what some of those questions would look like. And then, of course, it's up to the sub-team to modify their template however they see, the direction that they're heading and the analysis that they need to complete. Right now, we're at the point of just information gathering. We're not really asking the sub-teams to come up with a list of pre-recommendations or anything. And we'll probably, once we've gathered all the analysis, made a couple of revisions, then we'll probably go through and having the sub-teams form their recommendations and or prioritize some of their main findings as well. And if you'd like, I can send you an example of that we sent over or that we're using in the IGO group to this team just to get a kind of a rough feel for what we're doing.
I think that would be neat, and maybe circulate it to the whole list, but sub-team folks probably will want to take kind of a harder look at it than the rest of us. Because I think that helps in several ways. One is it maybe gives a little bit of a framework on which the team can work, but it also helps us aggregate the results. And I'm all for sort of self-documenting work where we can pull big chunks of the work that people do out and push it out first to the rest of us and then into the report. I think that'd be great. I think one of the things that we're going to want to contemplate at some point is, at least in my mind, I'm not thinking that the sub-teams come up with the final recommendations. They do the work and maybe come up with a preliminary recommendation that then the rest of us need to digest and agree to. Is that sort of the cycle that's going on in the IGO gang, Barry?
I'm sorry, Mikey. Can you repeat that, please?
Well, in the IGO work, are the sub-teams responsible for the final recommendations that go into the report, or are they doing preliminary work that then the rest of the working group refines and comes to consensus on?
This is Barry. I'd say that we haven't made that decision yet, but most likely the sub-teams will be responsible just for collecting the data and coming to a point where there may be a series of recommendations, but all of which will be rolled back up and reviewed by the overall working group before entering into the final report.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a cool idea. Oh, look, there's my dental appointment. Isn't that nice? Now you all know that after this call, I get to go get my teeth drilled. I think that's a cool idea. Why don't we go ahead, Barry, and if you could send that template with sort of a little introduction that summarizes part of the conversation to the list so that those who weren't on the call today aren't bewildered by this thing. And then if somebody could sort of give Steve Talitz a heads up, since he's not on the call. He's the only leader that's not on the call. Just to sort of fill him in on what that's all about. I think that would be helpful for the groups. Anything else about this template agenda item? That was pretty useful, I thought. Okay, on to the update on the expert panel. And again, sort of throw the ball to Marika first on that.
So this is Marika. Following last week's call, I went back to the different names that were suggested by different people on forming a kind of ad hoc expert panel to provide some feedback on their experiences in relation to some of the recent, or maybe not too recent, transitions from Thin to Thick, who is, so I think the .org one, and I think .us has been discussed as well. So from the people that were on that list, I've received confirmation from Greg Aaron, Michael Young, Howard, Eland, Andrew Sullivan, Chuck Holmes, and Chris Brown, and Sadiq Shandiwala, that they would be willing to help out. I basically indicated to them that I think the idea is that we would come up with a list of questions that we would circulate to all of them beforehand, and then hopefully try to schedule a call where they would be able to respond or even provide written feedback to those questions. One of the suggestions I did receive back from Chuck Holmes was that maybe it would be worth as well reaching out to some of the registrars that were or registrar representatives that were involved in that process, some of the big ones. And he has sent me a list of registrars that were the main players at that time, and I'm trying to see if first of all, someone with ICANN might be able to identify who those people might be, unless, of course, there are people on the call that might be able to help out with names, so we can also have the registrar perspective on those transitions represented as part of the panel.
Anybody on the call want to answer to that question from Marika as to registrars? Was anybody, let's see, who have we got on the call that's a registrar?
Yeah, because this is Marika. If I can add to that, the list that Chuck suggested or the registrars we should be looking at is Network Solutions, TwoCows, Register.com, GoDaddy, Enom, Melbourne IT, BulkRegister.com, DirectNIC.com, Schlund and Partner, and .Registrar.com.
Cool. All right. Well, certainly Tim, then, will be able to get us to the GoDaddy game. I think I'm going to let that one run right along the tracks that it's running, not take a lot of our time on this, because I think that finding those folks is probably best done the way you're doing it, sort of following the network of people that you've already contacted. That's, just as an observer standing on the side of all that, it seems to be coming along really well. And we've certainly got a powerhouse team already that have volunteered. And if we could get a couple, three, four more from the registrars, I think we'd have a killer team to aim these questions at. And I have a feeling it's going to take more than one call, because I think what we'll have is a really rich set of questions aimed at a very strong group of experienced folks that will produce a lot of really helpful information for us. So I'm liking how this is going, too. Thanks a lot for that, Marika. Anybody want to comment on any of this? Okay. That gives us a little time for the rest of the call to, maybe start developing some questions on our own. And since Susan's, let me just get to the archive of Susan's email list here. Let's see. You're doing this one, right? Yeah. All right, so here we go. see if I can find Susan's. Oh, I went the wrong direction. I'm reading the archive backwards. Sorry. There. Okay, Susan, I've got your questions here. I'm going to read them to you, and I'm going to steal them and staple them into my little document as we go, so that I continue my tradition of self-documenting work. Here. So the first question is, does the registrar retain the full Who Is for Thick Who Is registries currently, or do they only retain the customer information, which may include all of the Thick Who Is information? I'm going to circle back to these. I just want to read them into the transcript really quick. The second one is, since the registrars are already sending some Who Is information to the registry for .com and .net, how would this impact synchronization if we require that they send the whole record? And then the third question is, other than the magnitude of the number of records that a registrar would have to submit to the .com registry, how would requiring the whole record be any different than what they are already doing with the other GTLD registries? And just, I'm going to throw open the introduction. This subgroup's working on, what are the implications of a thin registry possibly becoming authoritative for a registrant who is data following the transition from a thin registry model to a thick registry model? A working group should consider the term authoritative in both the technical, i.e. the repository of the authoritative data, and the policy, i.e., who has authority over the data.
Mikey, this is Mark. Can I interrupt you for
a second? Yeah, go ahead, Mark. Jump right in.
This is the so Susan's post is for the synchronization.
You're absolutely
also,
right.
I don't want to speak for Susan, but I think her questions are intended more as starting points for discussion for the working group, not necessarily questions for the ad hoc expert panel.
Oh, okay. So those are misplaced, even in if I put them in the right place in the list. All right, then. So never mind. Thanks, Mark, for reining me in.
No problem.
I love it when I gallop off into the field, you know, through the fences and knock things down and stuff like that. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, it dawns on me as you were reading those questions that really we need to prefix it by asking what are the current practices for thick registries, for how do registrars handle thick registries. I suspect the answer is going to be, are some actually maintain a who is and display that when asked, and some just go fetch it from the registry, and there may not be uniformity, but I think we need to know before we worry about how does the registrar change, or registry, well, the registrar in this case, how does it change from thin to thick, we need to know, is there any uniformity in practice with current registrars and thick whoises?
Now, when you're talking about practices, are you talking about all practices or some subset of practices?
I'm talking about regarding the questions that were posed, wherever they go, were, does the registrar retain the full Who Is record or just part of it? And but the question can be asked not in the context of the transition from thin to thick, but just the current thick registries that exist today, and there are many of them. What are the registrar practices? I mean, I'm sure that they may retain the customer phone number in their own, you know, client files. But do they retain it as a Who Is entry for a particular domain, or do they rely, when asked to display Who Is, rely on what is in the registry? When we were talking earlier, one of the concerns was what may happen if the registrar retains the Who Is record and displays a different one for whatever reasons they've gone out of sync from what the registry will display. So I think first we need to do a level set to find out, does that kind of problem already happen? And if it does, adding one more to the group is not our business. It's not our concern. Am I just blabbering? Or
no, no, you're blabbering in a way that as you blabber, I am growing clearer on what you're saying.
I mean, we need to know what the current practices are with thick registries. We're not inventing the concept of a thick registry, however, at this point. There's plenty of them, and we need to find out, is there uniformity in how registrars handle them? If not, then there's not going to be uniformity when .com does a transition, and we don't need to worry about it. I think we're inventing worries that don't exist because each registrar already has practices. They may all be the same. They may be different.
That's a good start. Volker, go ahead.
Well, a lot of those answers are already in the current RAA, section 3.3 and the following, where it says that the data that we provide in the WHOIS currently, and this does not differentiate from thin WHOIS, shall consist of the following element as contained in the registrar's database, and then it lists all the elements that are in the WHOIS already. So basically, we are required to provide a WHOIS for thin or thick registries under the current RAA, which contains all the data that we also provided to the registry who is also providing WHOIS. So basically, we're doubling up the effort, which is something that we're trying to negotiate out of the current RAA version. But at this stage, every registrar provides the same data themselves from data in the database as the registry would in the thick registry. Because the RAA does not differentiate between thin or thick.
So, I think where Alan's question was going is, if we stay away from thin and only look at thick for a minute, is there any data synchronization issues where, with a thick registry, the registrar also has to maintain a copy of the data at the registrar. Am I getting that right, Alan?
Well, I guess I'm working from a position of ignorance that, based on what Volker said, he is implying that the registrar must keep a full copy of WHOIS. I'm sure they keep all the information. They're their clients, and they're not going to rely on someone else to retain their client information. But when I go to a specific registrar and do a WHOIS on a domain which they sponsor, I don't know whether they get it out of their local database or they query the registry.
Volker, what's
the RAA?
I'm not sure the RAA is specific on which they must do.
This data shall consist of the following elements as contained in the registrar's database. So basically, the RAA assumes that we are querying our own database for the WHOIS.
Then if indeed everyone interprets it that way, then if .com becomes thick, you would do the same thing.
Correct.
And for every thick WHOIS registry, there is the potential that your database and the registries get out of sync.
Well, we've had that case already with .org.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying. I'm saying for any thick WHOIS registry, there is a possibility that you make a change in your WHOIS, does not get reflected in the registry, and they're out of sync. That's a reality we live with. So be it.
Well, usually it's the other way around. The registry makes a change that we are not aware of.
Whatever.
Well, that's a fascinating thing.
I mean, we're not reinventing the wheel here.
No.
We're just doing it again. And that sounds like something which should be fixed, but it should be fixed generally for GTLDs and not necessarily, it's not a problem we need to solve.
Right.
Maybe just one more point that you should add to the look at the RAA, the section 3.4 where we are required to maintain our own electronic database of the data that's mentioned above. So it makes it more clear that we have that data. We generate the WHOIS from that data, and we must maintain that data. Even though the WHOIS is also provided by the registry, we are providing it as well, and we are keeping it as well.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay, so that's...
that damn contract for negotiating it. So
that's a great... I think what I want to do is see if we can pick off what would be really cool. Let's see if we can do this. Let's leave synchronization and migration for now and see if we could come up with a starter kit question for either authoritativeness or stability in data escrow. Sort of along the ones that, along the lines of the one that Alan did before, and then have a little bit of a discussion about it, just like we just did, just to give each of the three groups sort of a toehold of, one question and a little bit of a discussion. Sometimes I find it easier to think about and write about things if I have just one starting example. So is there a good one for either of these two, study and data escrow or authoritativeness, that people want to throw out as a starter? Just if you had a panel of experts, a killer good panel like the one that seems to be assembling under Marika's guidance, what would you think of as a question to ask them in either of these two areas? Volker, is that an old hand or a new one?
That's a vestigial hand, yes, sorry.
Okay. Mark, go ahead.
Hi, Mikey, it's Mark. I was thinking out loud here, but maybe we could piggyback on the synchronization question we just had. What happens when the registry and the registrar are out of sync? Who's authoritative in that situation?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I guess there's some overlap there, but I think it's maybe important to look at them in both, from an authoritative and from a synchronization standpoint.
Let's throw the ball to some of you, like Volker, to give us a little bit of a starting point to think about this. Volker, if I marched into your office and asked you the question, what would your answer be?
Registry. Definitely the registry, because any change they make is what goes. If a registry changes the registrar and the registrant, then the registrar database can no longer be authoritative because they're no longer the sponsoring registrar, even if they don't know it.
Right. Okay, cool. Everybody gets a gold star. How about one for Alan's group, just to even out the...
Well, it's Alan. I'll give one for this one. In the context of another working group that I'm on, I'm wondering for UDRP, where does the dispute provider do the query to find out who the registrant of record is? Do they do it differently if it's a thick and a thin WHOIS? Interesting question. I'm not sure. You can ask them on Thursday.
Let's see.
Well, Well, from my experience, they don't ask different questions. They always come to the registrar to confirm what's in the who is.
Even, if it's a thick who is.
Yes.
You're giving the opposite of what you just said. You said the registry is authoritative, but
usually that's the case.
But the dispute providers may use the non-authoritative one.
No, they look at the who is at the registry level, but then they come to the registrar to confirm that that's the correct data that they have on file as well. It's a procedural step.
And if they find a difference, what do they do?
Then they ask the registrant to explain the data, the difference, or they go back to the
to the
complainant and ask him to figure it out. The authoritative question comes from the effect that any third party may go to a court and ask the registry to make a change, which may include changing registrars. And there's nothing a registrar can do, so I wouldn't assume that we are authoritative if the registry can do that with a court order. Because effectively, the registry makes the authoritative change that overrules anything that the registrar can do. But the dispute provider still has to work through the registrar to effect all the changes, because the registrar is the party that is the responsible party under the UDAP, not the registry. The registry does not enter into the UDAP proceedings at any point.
Hmm. Interesting.
That is interesting. You know, from sort of a classic textbook database design perspective, this would make a great case study.
Well, I think it's an interesting question that will come up. Actually, it's not Thursday, it's tomorrow this week. Come back tomorrow, and what the dispute providers think.
We'll leave it in the pile, and I ought to give the authoritativeness group a good starting point for a question. Frederick, are you on this particular point, or do you have another question that you want to lob out there?
Hi, this is Frederick. No, I just wanted to back up this point from what Volker said earlier. Most of the time, we have contacts in the WHOIS, and we, as registrar, we have customers who are managing the accounts. And sometimes these people are different. So that's why some courts, some lawyers would come to us and ask who is in charge of the domain name. Because sometimes we have the owner who is in the WHOIS and who doesn't even know, who doesn't even want to manage the domain name. And we are the only ones who have, the managing contact of the domain name. So that's sometimes a difference. Sometimes our customer is different of the owner. I don't know if I make myself clear, but that's why at some point, the registry would come to the registrar and say, look, we have an issue with this domain name. Who is in charge of this domain name? Because the owner doesn't answer the emails, because he doesn't want to deal with it, because he has got a reseller, he has got a webmaster, he's got someone else managing the domain name, and sometimes doesn't appear on the WHOIS. So that sometimes make them come to us. And I also completely agree on what Volker said on the registry. The registry should be the only the only reference for the database. Because it makes a double work for us to keep a database for WHOIS if the registry has got it already. So I think we really should remove that obligation from the RAA at some point. We really should simplify the process and have only one database with the registry once it becomes thick. And that would simplify many, many things for many people. That's my point of view.
Yeah, and I think that one of the interesting... Let me just finish typing here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could also add one thing about double work. Double work is also for data escrow. What's the point of escrowing data if you have a sick whois?
Yeah, and that's one that's somewhat down the line in our... oops. I can't remember if that's in this one. Yes, that's... So maybe that's one of our... I think what I'm going to do here is...
Maybe just one point to that. I don't think it should be our goal to remove the obligation to keep that data from the registrar, and we also should not remove the data escrow function, in my view, because there have been cases in ccTLDs where the authoritative ccTLD registry who provides the WHOIS has had a data bank crash and asked all the registrars to provide the data to them again to make sure the most current data set is available. Now, this was a very small African TLD where that last happened. There was another one. I don't remember where that was, where something similar occurred. So it's always helpful to have the registrar have a database of data available to be able to help the registry recover. That said, I still stand by what I've said before, that the registry should be the authoritative.
Yes, but Volker, the registrar, it's not the registrar's role to act as a backup for registries. Is it?
I think that's debatable, but currently that's the case, and it has its advantages, so I'm not sure if we should remove that entirely.
Okay.
So do you do, the question I'm taking out of this is, do registrars do data escrow even when the registry is thick today?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes, we love it.
But for us, it's free. For the registrars,
you
have to pay for it. We don't. It's part of our ICANN contract and the fees we pay to ICANN.
Yes, it's free, but if we have to manage the system. And if you have to manage the system for only two TLDs, it's better than for 17 TLDs.
Yeah, and how about 1,500? Yeah. And to a certain extent, then we get into the scope boundary that Alan alluded to earlier, which is that we don't really have to worry so much about the number of TLDs, but we do probably have to think about the impact of, well, but you already escrow.com. So, yeah, all right, so never mind. Clearly, Alan, you get to run and edit the heck out of all this. After, you know, this is just sort of a kicker offer. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, on the scope that you just alluded to, our job is not to say how thick registries are handled.
Right.
You know, we are not going to impact how .biz and .info work on the registrar side or the registry side.
So whatever the common practice is, if it is a uniform practice and we recommend transition to thick, then that is the practice. If there's variable practice, then it will still be variable over different registrars. So, you know, it's tempting to try to fix all the problems in the world related, you know, that have some implication on thick versus thin. But, you know, it's not our job, and let's not make a scope more difficult than it is. Question I had, and it's a question for registrars, because I haven't checked that, I don't know the answer, is where is the information regarding resellers kept? If I do a whois query at the registrar on data that is on a domain which is done by through a reseller, there is information there that says who the reseller is, or I can query it somehow. There's an RAA provision in the new RAA to specifically say the registrar must provide that information. If it is a thick whois, is that information also somehow encoded in the whois, or is that something that is only resident in the registrar's database? That's my
question. I would like to answer to that. The current RAA does not mention resellers in the whois specifications at all. It has resellers on different positions mentioned, but the reseller concept is something that's...
If I may interrupt, it does say that the registrar must be able to tell the registrant who the reseller is.
Not
necessarily through who is.
Yes, correct. Basically, the way the registrar displays, or even if the registrar displays who the reseller is entirely voluntary on the basis of the registrar.
Okay.
Some do, some don't. Some just use the handle of the reseller at the registrar. Because at the end, for the registrant, the only party that is responsible towards ICANN for maintaining all the obligations of the RAA is the registrar, not the reseller.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Okay, so right now, if the registrar somehow embeds it in the registries who is, they do, there's no obligation to it, and we don't need to worry about it.
Correct.
Okay.
Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just coming back on the data ask card, because I noted that you said there might be a non-issue, maybe for the discussion of balancing, you know, whether it has an impact, but I think the working group should feel free to consider related recommendations. For example, if there would be a recommendation that, you know, takeaway should be required, I think if there are any recommendations that flow from that, saying like, well, and that if, you know, if this recommendation is adopted at the same time, the data escrow requirement should be reviewed or should be changed or should be kept in place, I think that kind of those kind of recommendations will be very helpful as well if they are to be considered as part of, you know, the overall conversation, if they come out, of course, of our deliberations.
Give me the example of the related recommendation to this one again, Marika. I was lagging.
It was on the discussion on the data escrow. I think you put there it may be a non-issue. My point is just that it may be a non-issue from reflecting on whether it's a, you know, good or bad idea to have thick whois, but if there's maybe an issue as a related recommendation, if there would be a requirement for thick whois, if the working group says, well, in that case, there's no need to escrow at the registrar level, that might be a related recommendation. That's just what I meant.
Yeah, and I think that's where we run into Alan's scope point, which is that we have to be careful not to make specific recommendations that actually apply across all TLDs, because that's way beyond our scope. And so if the current practice is... the way that Volker and Frederick have described it, where both the registry and the registrar escrow the data, I think we may run into a scope issue if we say in this particular case we also recommend that they not be required to do that, because now we're colliding with a much broader issue. Is that a good summary of your position, Alan? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I'm more flexible than I think I'm flexible on it. I think it is not within our chartered scope to make a recommendation on all GTLDs and thick whois in general. We certainly have the ability to say in passing that we recommend the GNSO or ICANN review the need for escrow in a registrar for a thick registry. So that's certainly within our means. It is even within our, we could certainly make a recommendation that due to the work we've done and the fact that we're talking about what essentially is the vast majority of TLDs, of registrations, since we're looking at the two largest ones, among others, it is certainly we can make a recommendation that that ICANN no longer needs escrow for at the registrar side for these TLDs. I would object strenuously if we put that in a package and tell the GNSO not to separate it from the more specific recommendation of to transition or not to transition. And I would expect the GNSO to pass that on to the board separately, for something that can be rejected or accepted. But nothing stops us from making the recommendation, even if it's out of scope.
Yeah, and this is Marika. If I can just clarify as well, indeed, I think that's something the working group would need to have a closer look at, because the recommendation could indeed be as well in a separate effort. This should be considered now that we're making this recommendation. But just coming on the scope, if you look at the charter itself, it does talk about a policy recommendation regarding the use of thick whois by all GTLD registries, both existing and future. So I think you might even argue that there could be recommendations coming out of this group on how thick whois should be applied across the board, looking at the charter question as such. At least that's how I've personally read that. But I think that's maybe a separate discussion we need to have.
Yeah, Marika, I think I agree with you that it could be deemed to be within scope. On the other hand, we have what may well be a simple question to dispense of one way or another and get this PDP done. And I think we want to keep it as narrow as we can to allow us to do our work. We don't need extra work. There's enough other work going on that is absolutely crucial, to the long-term, success of the organization. I don't think we want to make this one wider than we need to, other than to say, let's look at it, even if it could be construed as within scope.
Okay, I'm going to put a check back to the charter.
And, Mikey, just a note, I think some people have started dropping off the call.
It's after 10. Gracious. I got so entranced with all this. My apologies to all. Clearly, we'll wrap it up right now. Volker, you've got your hand up. Do you have anything you want to lob into this before we cut this off? I'm sorry. Nope. Residual hand. Okay. Thanks all. I think a terrific call, and I'll wrap up all these little questions that we've come up with and see you after the holidays.
Just to confirm, that's the 8th of January, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think January 2nd, people would have headaches. It's probably a bad idea.
And I think it's January 1st, actually, that is a Tuesday, so it's even harder.
Oh, January 1st, even worse. Then a severe headache and football matches to watch and parades.
Well, happy holidays to you all, and I think there was a productive meeting today. See you all
Thanks,
after
Volker.
The holidays.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Hey,
gang.
Yep. Bye-bye. Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Bye.
Julia, I think we can wrap up the recording and call it quits. Thanks ever so much for your help. Marika, thanks a lot. You're definitely forming up to your usual superstar standards here. Have a great holiday.
You too. Bye.
All right. See you later.